Do you want to talk about how you're feeling right now?
Oh, so many questions. What does this mean? What do I do?
Go on! Tell them what you think!
I liked it.
I think your calculations may have been off.
I think it's all right.
I just have a lot of feelings.
This pleases me.
These are perfectly normal feelings.
Do you even know what you sound like when you talk like that?
Now, shall we begin?
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Real Feels Podcast.
Ba-da-ba-da.
It's Drew here.
And Nathan.
And our very special guest.
Just Jack.
Jack.
It's my first time.
Hey! I'm glad that we're all together doing this.
Like, I agree.
This is good.
This is fun. Not only can I look at like your beautiful face, but I can see Jack.
It's obscured by the microphone.
It is kind of obscured by the mic, but it's fine. It's okay. You know, guys, we just
this is the Real Feels Podcast.
This is the Real Feels Podcast, and we have a fantastic movie for you. We got 1988's Willow.
88 or
89?
88. Oh. 1988. Almost
89.
Almost
6 years old.
I'm just kidding.
You were 6?
Yep.
We were 2.
We were Atlanta Door.
Oh, gosh. But you know what? This is our first fantasy movie. This is Nathan's birthday request film. And also, our first guest. This is a good day.
This is a
time for first.
The bones have augured well.
The bones told us something.
They told us nothing.
Okay. So what? You have a movie written by George Lucas and directed by Ron Howard. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, specifically written for Warwick Davis.
Mm-hmm.
This is a...
How flattering.
Right?
To be of smaller stature, to be a little person, and to have a full-on fantasy movie written about you and how little people... Good things can come from little people rocking it. That's
just... Little person.
Little person.
Little person, little people. Big dreams.
Got it.
Well, but then again, what? Didn't they... Forgive our ignorance if we're going to, like, insult anybody, but what? They had... Yeah, you wouldn't say little person. You'd say little people, wouldn't
little
you?
Little people.
Because they had Little People Big World, the mm-hmm. TV show. So I would
Which
assume.
Which is kind of odd because George Lucas's working title for Willow was Munchkins.
Oh, that's terrible.
Yeah.
Whoa.
That was the original. That was going to be the
oh,
original.
Oh, man.
Title. Yeah. So Willow, much better.
So, yeah. Yes. Willow, much better. Oh, my gosh.
So I don't think we have to worry too much about the political correctness.
Probably not.
George Lucas dodging a bullet.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But, you know, I mean, didn't really debut, like, not too long ago. It was May 20th, 1988. And it had a rough budget of $35 million. Which, like, for the U.S. gross, it was only $57 million.
Okay.
So, I mean, making $27 million, but, man, I think it's...
Where did it all go?
I don't know where it all... Well, I mean, I...
Industrial not to the light magic.
not to the dogs.
Stop motion film.
Oh, yes.
And possibly locations. Probably a lot of...
Hair extensions for
Hair
Val
extensions
Kilmer.
For the baby and for Val Kilmer.
The baby! Willow, where's the baby?
How many pigeons they needed to poop on Burgle Cut.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Acorn budget.
The acorn budget?
They only got 3. They must have been expensive.
Well, they're magic. I mean, true. He throws one out at Bav Morda.
Mm-hmm.
He
attempts to throw one at a troll.
He attempts to throw one at a troll, but it falls on the bridge. And then there's a deleted scene
mm-hmm.
where it falls into the boat and it sinks the boat, which is why when Willow comes back to the shore, he's all wet.
Oh.
But that's not really explained in the actual movie itself. But yeah.
A lot of things aren't explained.
A lot of things are not. There's a lot of continuity errors that could possibly be seen, but it doesn't draw away from, I think, how great the film is.
It was the first movie I remember seeing in the theaters. I had a poster up on my wall, and my first crush was Saoirse.
Woo!
I would kiss her in the morning when I woke up.
On the poster?
On the poster.
Of course.
Yes.
Was it just like a...
It's the best part of waking up.
Was it a good morning kiss?
Sorshing like, your cup.
Was sorshing your cup.
That's right.
Was it like a good morning kiss, or was it like run out, close the door, and then run back and like deeply kiss the poster?
Well, I was a child.
You're making it weird here.
To just say a peck.
Okay.
You
see what I did there?
He did it. Oh,
it all
Lord.
Comes full circle.
We need a distraction from that. Ladies and gentlemen, while you take a moment to listen to this fantastic trailer that we have for Willow, we want you to think about exactly how, again, amazing this movie is to truly tell the underdog story that is Willow Offgood.
From the creator of Star Wars, from the director of Cocoon, a world is awakening.
Why, with the strength of my great army, can you not find one little child?
It's a dangerous world.
That's why we need your help.
Your journey has just begun.
Willow. Heroes come in all sizes. But adventure doesn't come any bigger than this.
Find the child. Find the child.
We are not afraid of you. After them!
You're gonna get us killed.
Adjust them completely.
Next great adventure.
You are great.
Willow. Coming in May.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Kaya.
Kaya. The baby.
I'm here.
It's a Daikini child.
Don't touch it.
Yeah. Don't touch it. It's like it has rabies, like a mother bird. Like, it fell out of the tree, Daddy. Don't touch it. The mother won't take it back.
Yeah, if you get your send all over it, the Daikinis
aren't
going to
want it. The Daikinis won't take it back.
But, like, Daikinis aren't aliens. It's like if you knew of a different race of human, like, that was just, like, you know, bigger and stronger than just a normal-sized human, like giants, you wouldn't be like, oh, don't touch the giant, like, baby. Like, no.
See, but, okay, any small race, like in a fantasy film that has already been established right now, kind of like, okay, so take hobbits in the Shire for Lord of the Rings. Hobbits don't want adventures. Hobbits just literally want to, like, hang out, do their thing, and just live their life.
And collect seeds in the woods.
And collect seeds in the woods. So when you have the Alwyns, like, what? They just want to, like, live their lives. They don't want to, like, deal with the Daikinis. That's why Willow's all like, we'll send it down the river.
Yeah, just keep on going.
And we'll totally just ignore that all this happened.
Pretty cutthroat of Willow.
Bye, Moses.
Bye, Moses. How biblical.
It just cuts directly to the credits at that point. Directed by Ron Howard.
But what if Kaya was like, no. We raise it as one of our own, and then...
And this is where the female version of Elf comes into play.
Yes,
you're a what does he say? You poopy heady ninny moggin.
I
don't watch Elf. I hate that movie. I'm sorry for all those who like Elf. I can't stand it.
I like it, but I watched it maybe twice in my entire life.
It's such a...
If it was Christmas, I would choose other movies.
Yeah, Die Hard. We'll come
back to you guys with a Christmas list in a couple of months, because I think definitely celebrating Christmas-themed episodes would be a thing here.
Oh, yeah. But Kaya takes this kid in and is like, yeah, like, I've been wanting another kid. Like,
the kids are treating it like a pet. Can we keep it, Daddy? No.
Can we name it?
No, you can't keep the Daikini child.
Maybe Kaya's coming from a strictly business perspective. Like, this is going to grow up full grown. Think of all the tilling this kid could do.
Think of the tilling, the high
we
shelves.
We won't even need Burgle Cut anymore.
Oh, my gosh. So, I mean, okay. So the baby is... obviously, somehow gained experience in whitewater rafting from going down the river and being separated
and
from
cross country like survival.
So,
Bear Grylls status,
right? In the beginning of the film, you have the mother giving birth to the child, and Laura Dannon has this weird birthmark that is obviously the sign that she is to bring and be the downfall to Queen Bavmorda.
How, like, we don't know.
Yeah, how? It's not even explained. It's much like, again, you have this biblical reference of, you know, Moses, all right? Prince of Egypt out there, anybody who wants to go watch that movie. You have all the female children being collected, rounded up, probably killed off, and checked because not legend, but there was a, I can't think of the word right now.
Prophecy?
Prophecy!
There it is.
That's the word.
That she's... John Connor. And
she's John.
Well, the Celtic, the rune in her arm is actually Celtic, and it translates to Death Star plans.
I almost was about to say, ladies and gentlemen, this is why we have our resident Willow scholar of Jack on board, but yeah, that's great.
So the baby is born, and Bab Morda is notified, and she has to be brought down to check, you know, on the baby, because otherwise she would definitely not go down to the dungeon. She's far too witchy. And queen. What?
Talking about Sorsha.
Not Sorsha. Queen Bab Morda. But they check the baby. It is the right baby with the right mark.
Ding.
And the midwife, you know, takes that baby and leaves the castle and just goes.
Terrible security at the castle, by the way.
Apparently. Who's not? I mean, obviously the dungeon has one exit. Like, who's not watching every exit?
Yeah.
I don't understand. So, I mean, she gets out of the castle. She starts to literally make her way across mountains through snow and rivers.
But she gets such a head start on something that happens within, like,
5 minutes.
Five minutes. Like, this
she
is the slowest
out in the
dog.
Middle of the night. This baby was just born.
Like, just born.
She couldn't have gone more than 100 yards outside the castle.
So she somehow gets away. The next scene is her, like, taking care of the baby. That's when we get the opening credits the title in, you know, nice,
good music.
Calming blue. Very good music by James Horner. Mm-hmm. Very good music. And she's, you know, kind of like cradling the baby by a fire in the riverside. And then, you know, they keep going. And then eventually you find them again taking a rest. And she's kind of like cooing at the baby. And she's
growing up.
Who's growing up
rather fast.
So fast. This baby apparently was just born. And, sorry, like, that baby is easily 6 to 7 months old.
Some
right
performance-enhancing drugs going on. Like, that thing is growing.
I mean, maybe Daikinis, like, grow quickly, but I have no idea why that baby would be that big. And she's already got, like, a full head of hair, which, like, fun fact, the hair was put on with
syrup.
Like, syrup.
Honey? Or
like, honey-ish syrup, because they didn't want to put adhesive onto a child's head.
But this child is already making the most adorable faces.
Oh my gosh.
Oh
so
my
cute.
Gosh.
She looks exactly like my niece, which kind of like made me be drawn into the movie even more. So it just...
Okay.
Yeah, she's much, much older than she probably should be at the point in time that we're led to believe that they've been searching for her, that she escaped. She can hear the devil dogs off in the distance and the knights riding on their horses coming to get her. And so she puts the baby on a piece of a convenient piece of loose dirt and grass, and it floats. So she puts the baby on there and it floats away again, all Moses-esque, you know, Prince of Egypt
down
style.
Down the river.
Let my people go.
She floats away. Deliver us. And then apparently, yeah, she floats all the way down to the Nelwyn village where
Hobbiton Light,
where Willow's children are playing by the river. They find the baby there and they're just like, oh my God, let's go get daddy. And I love the fact that when we first see Willow, he's tending to his fields, and it's not a horse. It's not even like a Shetland pony. It's a big old pig.
Mm-hmm. It's a farm pig.
It's a working pig.
Yeah.
That's a pretty
works hard
pig,
for the money.
Actually. Mm-hmm. So hard for the money.
Well, bring home the bacon.
Better.
There we go. We were waiting for it.
Jack will now be on staff as our resident pun. Pun master.
And you have the scene with Burglecut when he kind of like confronts them. And I'm sorry, but this was some of the hardest acting like that I had to like swallow through this whole film. This is the hardest for me because it's so wonky and... Everyone's delivering their lines like this is like a sixth grader's play. Like, we collected those seeds in the forest.
It's not hard to see how 12 years later you got George Lucas with episode 1 talking about trade embargoes and trade disputes and all this stuff. We open up talking about seeds and where they came from.
Where did you get these seeds? My family and I have been collecting them throughout the year.
In the
That's
forest.
Not illegal. One day, Offgood, this land will be mine.
Yeah. But again, Burglecut, I love his acting.
He's
ruthless. The best of, I think, the
he's probably the only villain in the entire movie I mean, in like villain-esque.
I was like,
that you, okay.
Did you like, not see the beginning?
He's like, okay, much like Hobbiton light, Burglecut is villain light. All right?
Okay.
He's not necessarily like a good person per se, because everything that he does throughout the movie is by force. Like, he comes and he harasses Willow. He mocks Willow when he's on stage, when he's brought before, you know, the wizard, you know, council, the wizard and the elder council. And then when he goes on the mission, he's forced to. And then he threatens Willow before he leaves to go back. Like, nothing that Burglecut does is technically, like, a good thing.
Well, if you're looking at it, that he's, like, because is he kind of looking out for the village, though? Going, hey.
Oh, no, 100% himself.
I just like in George Lucas's fantasy world, there's still the slight possibility that your farm could be taken from out from under you from the mildly corrupt local businessman Burglecut.
Because land is so hard to come by in this in this area.
Yeah.
Which apparently, like, I don't know how close these locations are to each other, but everybody seems to get to the next destination, like, really quick. I mean, I don't know if there's, like, a save point, and then they immediately have, like, teleport there.
You
but
cannot fast travel.
Fast travel when enemies are nearby.
It's like the airspeed velocity of a swallow. Like, what's the ground speed velocity of a group of pecs? Like, how far did they go?
Yeah. They travel so well.
They travel so well. But, I mean, they take in the baby, like, against Willow's better judgment. He even says, like, we're not keeping this baby. It's going away. Here, Willow, I need to do something. Hold the baby. No, I don't want to hold the baby.
He falls
and
it
immediately, like, stops crying and just smiles at him. And you see that face on him, and he's just all like, oh, shit. Now I'm in love.
All right.
Willow's heart grew 3 sizes that day.
That day. Which was a real problem for his cardiologist.
Oh, God.
So they eventually come to this festival that happens every year, where a new
good
apprentice
timing
is going to be chosen for the head Noen. Who,
and he throws a riddle out that nobody saw coming.
No, he tries to tell them, like, you know, the greatest. Like, the greatest start to someone's adventure, like, is it, like...
Oh, all the power.
Finger? Like, all the power, sorry, is in your finger. Like, which finger is it? And he holds out his hand, and each person's, like, picking a finger, and they're like, he's like, nope, nope, no. I always wanted him to be like, nope, nope. Which one? Nope.
Get it right down to the middle
that
one.
It was a middle finger.
It was right down to the middle finger.
It's a podcaster.
Shh. Listen with their minds.
But Willow hesitates for a sec. And then he picks one, and it's not the right one.
And it's the wrong one.
We do not grant you the rank of sorcerer.
He doubted
himself.
He doubted.
It was the thumb.
But he gets the one
right back at himself.
This guy.
He gets the one-on-one time with the sorcerer and is like, you know, I've been really, you know, training and stuff. And he's like, no, you're doing good, kid. You're doing good. Like, you should have picked the right, you know, you should have picked the one that you thought.
He's like, you hesitated. Why did you hesitate? And he's like, oh, it's stupid. No, why? Oh, well, I was going to pick my own finger. He's like, and that's the right one. Because it's all about me.
He's like, so wait, then can I be the sorcerer's
apprentice? The sorcerer? Nope, not till next year. I'm going to pick a different finger next year.
Yeah.
But, I mean, during the festival, you actually have it interrupted with these
Rottweilers in costumes.
These Rottweilers in costumes, these devil dogs come bombarding into the village and start terrorizing everybody. It, like, knocks over the tables and, you know, immediately goes for a baby, like, carriage, well, a baby stroller.
For me, that's
kind
a leap of logic. Like, it must have been looking for somebody's baby. I was like, no, these are beasts. Baby's the low-hanging fruit. Like,
the thing right that can't move super fast.
Which in turn brings to the idea that, like, obviously these things are being brought out by Bav Morda, and you kind of, like, got to bring it back where if these are the beasts that Bav Morda is bringing out to send ahead, if it's immediately going to, like, destroy this baby bed, obviously, if there was a kid in it, how are they going to bring Laura Dannon back for the ritual?
In pieces.
In pieces.
Well, it's kind of alive. Nope, never mind.
It's kind of alive. So yeah, these were Rottweilers in masks and costumes, in which, I mean, it's a cheap kind of, like, little trick to create a brand new creature, but I think effective nonetheless. But I think more importantly, like, out of all the acting, and it's kind of like not fair to say that it was during this like mass chaos. You have Willow's daughter up on like a stage, a stage that he was on performing his magic tricks earlier, and she's crying like, this is not acting. Like, this is genuine.
Someone get that baby offset.
Like fearful. Like, she is terrified, which my mind, I'm thinking they did not tell her that, like, these mad rabid dogs were coming.
Or that everyone's going to be running around screaming.
I mean, maybe this is, like, another one for, like, you know, aliens. They didn't tell that the chest, you know, was going to burst open. They wanted natural reactions. But, like, dang. Like, seeing that little girl cry like that, it immediately took me out of the movie. It made me very concerned for the fact of, like, this was a choice? That's not right.
Yeah. Myself in the scene, I'm just waiting for the movie to actually begin.
Oh, yeah. No, because the Fellowship hasn't even got started just yet. They finally do kind of go, okay, we got to bring the baby. They get the baby to the elder. We need to assemble a team to get this baby to the other Dakinis. And finally, we are maybe somewhat closer to starting this movie.
Right. So they're told to, like, gather a group together. So Willow is obviously going to take it to the crossroad, the Daikini crossroads.
The 13th warrior.
The next Daikini that they come across. And they're like, man, we need a team. We need more people. And Migosh says that he's going to come up because that's Willow's best friend. You know, Migosh is a great guy. And then...
he's a bro.
He's Sam. Yeah. He's Samwise Gamgee. Just, you know, hey, I'll go with
what, like, Funkor says, I'll go. And Burglecut's like,
he's
no,
our best warrior.
He's our best warrior. We need him here.
Stand aside.
Stand, get back there. And the head elder, like, looking at the bones,
I
going,
I sense
like,
this group is going to need leadership.
Leadership.
Burglecut.
You, Burglecut. You will go. And he's like, Funkor! He turns back. He's like, oh, we need him now. Or, I mean, me. Oh,
and a great fade out that scene, too.
Right. And so they started off, and they continue on. Like, there's this great, like, departure from the village. They're like, yes, go, be strong, come back safe.
And my spear.
And my spear. They all have spears. But before he leaves, you have Kaya come to him. He says bye to his children, and
This is something that I don't get. It's something that happens only in movies. You don't see it anywhere else in life, at least not where I've ever grown up. Who gives somebody their hair?
Yeah, she cuts off
her braid
and gives it to him, like, here, for luck. And I'm like, your hair is good luck? That's going to suck for you. It's all with me now. But, I mean, yeah, she gives him her braid of hair. And now she's got, like, this shortish, you know, little haircut. But, again, you're right. Where is this going to bring you luck? I mean, I understand that...
You're just you're the weirdo who's sniffing a braid,
right?
Like, while you're traveling
I mean, like,
around.
In certain like, cultures where people are, like, they aren't allowed to, like, cut their hair because of, like, religious practices, or if it's for honor in a certain way. Like, in The Last Samurai, where they have that unfortunate young samurai where the soldiers cut off his hair, and he has to, like, hold and restrain himself without, like, attacking them. And I mean, the only other time that I can think of when someone actually walked away with a piece of hair or any type of, like, you know, adornment for their head, you have Gimli leaving the forest. She gave me three strands of her hair. Gimli leaving with Galadriel's hair because he didn't want anything. He just thought that she was the most beautiful person in the entire world, in all of Middle Earth. Yeah, she gives him the hair, and they depart. And they, again, you have this transitional scene of them traveling across.
A little montage,
and it's...
Which is only, like, a day and a half.
Right, it's not a huge amount of time, but, I mean, you have them, like, lugging not only their supplies, but Willow has the baby on his back, and this compartment that she's being carried in,
the little baby Bjorn
thing, but it's heavy metal and it's rigged because the baby, as they continuously film, because they shot all this out of sequence, so the baby grew out of the baby Bjorn that they were carrying him in, and it was the baby was getting heavier and heavier, so they had to, like, reinforce it. So not only does Willow have the weight of the baby, but also the backpack that they're carrying it in. And so, I mean, kudos to, like, Warwick Davis for not only having to, like, throughout this film, learn magic, learn how to ride a horse, obviously get some gains to carry that baby.
Bulked up.
But he also had to learn how to care for a child at 17 years old. Willow, like Warwick Davis, was 17 years old doing this.
He already knew how. He just took care of two kids. Kidding me? No.
And at this point, since the baby is constantly in the baby Bjorn and being like they're walking, and Warwick Davis had not like a full stride like when he was walking, so the wobbling gave the baby some motion sickness. So when he was all like, "Oh, she needs to be changed. She's not feeling well." And Burgo Cut's like, "Let me see her." And he takes the baby and looks at her. That vomit, that spit that goes on his face, actually is the baby throwing up on him.
Oh wow!
Yeah. And so they kept it in the movie.
Burglecut suggests desserts.
Ah, take it. Oh, Burglecut. But then when they hand off, we got to speed this up a little bit, but like finally we get to the crossroads where, as Jack was saying,
I think that's where the movie finally begins, but that's it. When they get to the crossroads, we're 27 minutes into the movie already. So it's like, all right, finally, like we're getting somewhere. You're not just about a day in the life of your pecs.
Yeah,
your pecs.
And they come across our hero,
Mad Mardigan,
Val Kilmer, looking good too. Looking good, looking real good with
little
the long
dehydrated.
Hair.
But I mean,
he was not in that basket long. He did not atrophy at all.
No,
them teeth.
Nah.
When he smiles, you're like, ooh, all right,
got some nasty teeth. But I mean, it's there where obviously they're He's constantly begging for water, and they're all like, "Well, he's a Daikini. We can leave with him." He's like, "Oh yeah. I'll take care of the baby. I'll take care of the baby." And they're like, "Willow's like, no, are you insane?
Checkcare.com. I'm on there. Like, I'm a good babysitter."
And so, Burgle Cut's like, "No, we're leaving. We said we would come to the crossroads. We're finding the first Daikini, and we are gone. Sorry, bye." Oh, also, off good. Your land is going to be mine. Mm-hmm. Bye.
They're going to hang me in the morning. Oh, see? It says 310 to Yuma all over again. Oh. No.
So he's going to stab him in his sleep with a fork?
If Burgle Cut would have came with him, yeah. Good Lord. No, he liked Burgle Cut. He's like, no, I like you, Burgle. Calling him out.
So
I like how Mad Mardigan is then on like a first name basis with the
Migash, give me some water. Burgle Cut, don't you listen to him?
He knows, and he goes through like
he's a charmer.
Multiple attempts of like strategies of like okay, how do I get water? All right, first I'm going to like scare him. No, we're cool, we're cool.
Sweet talking.
A lot of different approaches,
right? And so they finish off by having like a sleep there on the crossroads, and the next morning they see an army coming, and they're like, "All right, an army. This is going to be great. We can pass off the baby to them." And lo and behold, nobody wants anything to do with the baby.
They're off to war.
Let alone some no ones. He's all like, "Excuse me, sir. Can you please take care of this baby?
Out of the way, Peck."
The most grandiose insult in the entire world.
It was elegant.
It was elegant.
Well delivered.
Way, Peck.
Finally, they end up giving it to Mad Mardigan, and it's okay.
Well, I mean, after they, like, set him free, and he, you know, can prove that Alora Dannon actually, like, is smiling at him, and she's not crying, she, you know, they pass off, like, the diaper rag, the changing clothes, and he's all like, "Oh, and here's the milk.
For the baby.
The milk bladder." And he's all like, "Is there any milk in it?" He's like, "It's for the baby. I wouldn't steal from a child." So, at that point, I mean, Willow and Migash are heading back home. Like, their job is done. They can go back to their quiet little lives, and Willow can, you know, tend to his fields and hope to be at a magician's apprentice. Or,
hone his parlor tricks.
Yeah, right? And it wasn't until the point that Willow's like, "Did we make a mistake? I think we made a mistake." That you have this tiny little voice coming straight from behind them.
"Hee hee! I stole a baby!
We got the baby!
And lo and behold, you have that the baby has been taken, kidnapped.
By the brownies.
By the brownies.
Migash. Did we do the right thing? Absolutely. There's nothing to worry about.
Yeah! I stole the baby! I stole the baby!
Wait, come back!
That's you, stupid bird!
But I mean, so I almost want to, like, can we just do our cut? Can we just jump into our cut?
You
want to
jump into Cut It Out
yeah,
this early?
Let's. I've made up my mind. This is, yeah, jump. Let's do it.
All right.
What were you thinking?
Well, you got me. By all accounts, it doesn't make sense.
And you've got to cut it out.
All right. All right. This
let's explain.
Cut it out.
Cut It Out is where we try to find a scene in the film where it either doesn't make sense or it's just so out of place that if you take it away from the movie, it wouldn't detract from the plot at all. All right, so it would still be a great film, or it would still have a continuity to where, again, it's not necessary.
I think the whole Brownies gimmick scene point in this film is pointless.
We are not afraid of you.
Like the Brownies in entirety?
I disagree.
The Brownies are comic relief.
Okay, yes, they're the Gimli of this film.
You meet Shailendra. And she gives you the backstory that Willow did not have before.
And this is where, and also with Shailendra, is where you actually learn the baby's name.
Okay. Yeah,
and
no.
She's special.
But there's so many other ways that they could have established this. Him meeting the fairies and, the fairy, you know.
Right.
All of that could have happened a little bit more organic. Having these two characters that do nothing in the final battle, like.
They're the comic relief, and
yes!
and I've spoken to you guys about this before, that Willow is basically Star Wars fantasy. They're the droids, you know. They fulfill a utility purpose, and they fulfill the comic relief to a certain extent. So I feel they're very much needed.
Right, and it's not like they don't have a direct cause and effect to the story overall, because I mean without the Brownies you wouldn't have the magic love dust.
But you could have easily inserted that
dust
with Willow could have been given some powder, and the sorcerer could have said, hey, use this, to detract, any, if you run into any danger, this will neutralize the situation. There's so many ways that they could have just done without this whole gimmick. I do love the beer scene.
It also allows them to stretch their special effects muscles with the
right,
because
I mean,
oh yeah,
because nothing
fairies
else in the film is green screen
and
except for the Brownies
and the monster.
Well, I mean, okay, and the monster itself, but I mean, I don't know.
And
I,
the trolls
I like
climbing on.
Well, and when the morphine, when Willow changes her back.
Yeah. Okay, that's true as well. But I mean,
we're tearing that apart. Drew. You say that again.
Fine. I don't know. I like the Brownies. I think they're funny characters. I think they bring a good sense of humor. Right? Don't you want the mouse hat?
Kevin Pollak's
it's best
hat.
When the mouse hat, when he takes it off and he wipes his tears at the very end, and you realize that, oh God, he's been bald this entire time under the mouse hat. But it's a funny, kind of interesting thing where, especially after Willow gets captured, I found it very, very hilarious where the Brownies have tied them to the ground, and there's Willow, and I'm looking at it going,
Gulliver's Travels
like Lilliputians, yeah. Good Lord. Mm-hmm. I thought it was a funny, funny scene.
Did you have a Cut It Out?
I do have a Cut It Out. It's for way, way down the line, in the film, where they're getting up to the castle, Mad Mardigan and Sorsha and Razel and Willow. They're gathering this army with Eric, Mad Mardigan's, Viking-esque blonde, soldier
he's
friend.
He's sort of like the estranged Chewbacca to
I would say Lando.
Well, Eric has a moral code sort of like Chewbacca does.
He's also a general, just like Lando becomes later on.
Yeah, I'll agree to disagree.
But, I mean, it's where they're coming up to the castle, and Bab Morda is looking out at this force that's coming to, retrieve the baby, and she's all like, "You're all pigs. Pigs. Pig." That's my Cut It Out. I hate her. "You're all pigs.
You're all pigs. Pigs."
About to
Her snorting, it was so annoying.
She's getting into the spell.
No, just, you
don't. So my disagreement with that, cut it out, is, and I get it, but by turning them all into pigs, they wouldn't have, there would have been the impetus to change Finn Rizel back into her human form, and then you get the sort of the cutting edge morphing CGI that's the first time that was ever in any movies. That was sort of the dawn of the digital age.
Wow.
Was that morphing from a ostrich into a turtle into a tiger, and then
right.
Finn Rizel. And then she could change everybody back. But it is.
But the snorting during the spell is like the I think the annoying thing. The fact that the CGI like changing happened was because Willow had to protect himself during the spell, and then once that was all done, you know, Bab Morta's like, oh, they're all pigs. Cool. We can go back to the ritual now.
And we can drop our guard.
We can totally drop our guard. Why she didn't go down and like send the soldiers and say, hey, go kill the pigs. Now we have meat.
Yeah, now we can eat.
Like, now we can eat all the apparently during the filming, a lot of the pigs had to be doused with buckets of cold water because they were trying to like mount and hump each other. So yeah. Turning them into pigs.
It's very hot.
CGI
Although, I mean, your favorite little brownies during the changing of into pig scenes, piglets. They became out as little piglets. Oh, it's so funny. Jack, you gotta cut it out.
As far as a scene or a line?
Scene.
Well, I mean, it could be a line.
It could be a line.
It could be a
scene.
Line like in the scene that just made it weird. But then again, like later on, we'll do. You can say that again, and that's where we can say like the best and worst lines in the film.
All right, then the scene would definitely have to be the intro. They could have edited a lot of that out to maybe like 10 or 15 minutes. You get to
I'd say five.
Yeah, you get
five
to the
tops.
Crossroads. That's sort of like where the movie sort of I feel truly begins, and that's 27 minutes into the movie. They could have pared a lot of that stuff down.
Yeah, if Happy Gilmore can do it in 10 minutes, this one could do it maybe 11. Mm-hmm. But yeah, okay. Even though you disagreed with everything that we said, I'll agree with this one.
Thanks for coming by the way. Thanks for being on the show.
We
That's
needed
great.
This, though. That's we good.
Should I see myself out?
Your Uber's here.
Your okay,
Uber's
all right, here. Thanks.
God, is it 9
thanks
o'clock
for coming. Already?
So what do we have? They meet. I can't think of her name now. What's the fairy? The elementals.
Shalindriel.
That's it. Shalindriel. So Shalindriel calls Willow over. The brownies like drag him over and untie him. And then, lo and behold, Alora Dannon is there and safe and actually quite happy. And it's the elemental who gives Willow the wand. And says, oh, Alora Dannon is special. She's meant to bring down, like, Bav Morta. And she has chosen you to be her protector. You know, she likes you. And
so does that mean that he got magic abilities because of her?
I think it's implied that he has
like
innate,
he has, like, innate
magic abilities.
But it's the wand. It's Shalindriel's wand that he gets that he also has to seek out Rizel.
Yeah.
And which, I mean, if this is the case, if like this is her wand.
But what spell does he even do that, like, all he does is the
he
magic.
Does, he does
trick.
No, he does no real magic.
Well, at the very
that's
end.
Not, that's not true.
At
that's
very,
not true.
At the very end.
Well, he doesn't have Shalindriel's wand at the end when he does the disappearing pig trick, but it
right.
causes him pain. So he did do some sort of magic.
What?
Yeah.
What? No, I meant at the very end when he throws
when
at
he
the
throws
rock.
The apple.
At the apple, and yeah, it's, yeah. It becomes.
But I mean, at this point right now, like, it's a question of, like, man, I mean, is Shalindriel, like, is she trapped in the forest? Because, I mean, obviously, if she's this powerful, and she's giving up her wand.
I sort of feel like Willow could have used the Star Wars scroll at the beginning.
Right.
A little backstory would have been nice. We're just sort of all thrown into this on
yeah.
faith.
And then you have to. So like it's like a quest within a quest. So not only do they have to get the baby,
Death Star plans.
I mean the Death Star plans, to the rightful people to bring down Bad Morta. But now they have to go get
Bad Morta.
Rizel.
Only
I mean
two
Obi-Wan.
Meters wide.
They have to go find Obi-Wan, and lo and behold, they eventually get to this little fishing village.
But I feel like we're skipping
over. We're totally skipping
over one of the finest scenes in the
movie. The finest scene,
the tavern scene.
The baby,
again, George Lucas, it's the cantina scene.
It is the cantina scene. So the baby was left with Mad Mortigan, which was captured by brownies, which was returned to Willow. And then, lo and behold, he's trying to find food for Alana Dorn. I can't think of the baby's
they
name.
They don't have Laura Dannon.
Laura Dannon.
They don't have milk at the tavern, but they do have plenty of good throw-in lettuce around.
Get out of here, Peck. So the two brownies go with Willow, and they get into the tavern. And they're trying to find milk again for Alora Dannon. Mm-hmm. And you're right, they do have a bunch of good throw-in lettuce. And Willow takes cover and shelter underneath the stairs, where, lo and behold, the brownies start bickering and fighting.
The dust of broken hearts.
This love dust gets smacked into one of the brownies' faces. And it's he falls in love. And you think it's like the first thing that he sees. But I think it's the first female form, the first female form, or like the opposite sex that they come across. So he spots a cat, and he immediately falls in love with the cat. He's like, "You're so beautiful."
With his mouse helmet,
those ears.
Rue, you fool!
And the cat tries to bat him, and he falls, and he lands in a mug. He's like, beer! He goes swimming in the beer mug.
So to watch this movie in preparation for this, rewatching it, I probably haven't seen it in 15 years or so. My girlfriend had never seen it. And upon the falling into the beer mug, exclaiming at its contents, and then diving right back into the beer mug, she turned to me and just said, "That's you."
The beer?
The brownie and the beer. Swimming pool of beer.
I've always liked you, lady.
when I was young, I told my teacher we were able to do an assignment, and it was one of our dreams. And I said, "I dream of swimming in a pool of Pepsi." And my teacher told me, "Nathan, that's ridiculous because it would be too acidic. So this doesn't count. Pick something else." I said, "You told me to pick a dream. This is my dream. Like what?"
Is it
Don't
bad
take
that
my
I
dreams
yeah.
away?
Don't take your dreams away. Is it bad that I also wanted to swim in a swimming pool full of Dr. Pepper?
See?
Delicious.
And Jack was obviously much more advanced than we were. I was like, yeah, beer.
Beer.
A nice light ale, if you prefer. Right. So then Willow goes tumbling into the next room, and we find cross-dressing
Mad Mardigan. It's like, quickly, my husband will be here soon.
They have so much time to, like, this is almost like Little Rascals, where they're like, "Wait, you did this much preparation of, like, costume when you could have just, like, bolted out of there?"
He could have just left. Like, who's going to, like, notice that you're suddenly leaving? Because obviously the husband doesn't know who's schnooping his wife. But, like, just put on your pants and leave. Just leave the bar. Who's going to notice?
Mad Mardigan, he gets out of prison. He immediately enters Gash Hound mode. And he goes to the nearest tavern and just takes up there.
Ugh. So the husband comes barging in through the door named Lud. And he's just looking around. He's like, Where is he? "Oh, there's no one here, dear. Just me and my cousin.
Who I've never introduced you to."
What does she say the name? Broomhilda or something?
Yes.
And immediately,
Hilda,
she, like, Mad Morgan's, like, covering the face, kind of like veil style, but you can still see a brisk 5 o'clock shadow, and he's all like,
Wanna breathe. Again,
so good.
Children's movies in the 80s were the best.
You could get away with a lot, but I love the whole,
hanky-panky?
No, just the fierceness in his eyes, be all like, "Wanna breed?"
He's a sweet talker.
Right? You know what? Lud gets down to the point. Mm-hmm. And at that point, they try to get away. Mad Mardigan takes the baby
and takes the baby. Sorcerer's troops arrive. That's the first encounter between her and Mad Mardigan.
Elwins make terrible nannies and takes
you're
the baby.
You're beautiful and you're very strong.
You're very strong for a woman. "Is this your baby?" "Yes. Let me see her." "No, don't let her." And just kicks Willow out of the way.
So for only having a few lines in the movie, Lud,
yeah.
Lud, has some want a breed and not a woman.
Not a woman. Some of the most memorable
commits
quotes.
To each one of those lines. Mm-hmm.
Not a woman. Not a woman.
Gentlemen, meet Lud.
Meet Lud.
Starts the bar fight and
they get away.
You're no woman.
Now, honey.
Not a woman.
Easy.
Gentlemen.
Not a woman.
Meet Lud.
Yeah.
And they get away into this, Mad Mardigan gets onto this wagon and starts riding away. Willow jumps from one of the windows mm-hmm. and gets into the wagon with Alora Dannon, which, again, regardless of what danger this child gets into, it is nevertheless safe in every single situation, which oh I find to be shocking.
This is Star Wars. This is the... This is the Millennium Falcon getting chased and like, I got him. Yeah. Like, great kid.
Don't get cocky.
Great kid. Yeah, don't get cocky. So this is obviously when we cut this movie episode and we immediately splice in the second half of our Star Wars episode.
Yeah, obviously.
Because nothing's going to be different.
Oh my gosh.
So we get our first taste of action.
Yes,
here.
The chase.
You know, Willow trying to get the reins that have fallen down. Mad Mardigan, you know, he doesn't have a sword yet, but he's really wielding that log.
Flail. Yeah.
And he gets the flail.
Exactly. And the more that they are being chased down, the more that the fighting is continued, and the wagon breaks apart.
Mm-hmm.
And lo and behold, once again...
Still flying half a ship.
Right. The baby is, like, calm, not crying, perfectly safe. There's a moment where they go over a log that is in the middle of the road, and like Willow goes flying forward, and Alora Dannon, for some reason, safe in the back.
Yeah, but the brownies, they contributed. They cut the rope on the barrel of
they
ale.
Fine, they can
the
stay. They can stay.
Yeah, yeah.
Hello, everybody! We have arrived! You are safe!
Then the chariot hits a tree at the end, and I think that was our first Wilhelm scream.
That was around like the first Wilhelm scream. There's only three of them in the movie overall.
Only three.
There's some movies that like throw 10 in there because like, let's see if it's a joke. Now people,
I'm sure it's free where they're like, yeah,
oh,
public domain, just toss it in there.
But, I mean, they eventually get away from the people who are trying to capture them, but the wagon is, like, toast. And so they get off the road, and they hide off the side of the road, and the soldiers who were tailing the wagon a little bit off continue down. And
they're,
one of them is
Sorcha. Terrible trackers.
They're terrible trackers.
They can't track a midwife and a baby. They're certainly not going to be able to track
in the snow.
Two brownies,
they're not going to track Mad Morgan in a dress and Willow carrying a baby. But, like, the thing that was so confusing about this entire scene is that you have the sound of the devil dogs coming after them, but they are nowhere to be seen. There's no devil dogs there.
They're terrible dogs.
They're terrible dogs. They're
Bev Morton needs to fire her kennel master.
Right, right. Yeah. They're looking for more like baby car seats to
and
go
I,
into.
I like this scene too. How Val Kilmer, sorry, Mad Mardigan, like tells the brownies, like, find me some food, find me some eggs,
find me some eggs. We are not afraid of you.
Ah!
They have good banter.
Nathan's just shaking his head. He's like, I hate both of you.
They're just not that great. But we'll keep them.
I know where to go. We're going this way.
No, we're not. We're going that way.
That way. You are drunk. You're right. That way.
So what do we get? We've got like a little campfire scene. Then Willow sort of tries
practicing
to test out the wand a little bit.
Right, he's practicing with the wand, and he's like, I don't even know if Willow like truly knows like magic words. It sounds like he's just trying to like say the gibberish that is the same thing that he does with his magic show, his like fake magic show that he does in the village. And lo and behold, he somehow like fiddles with that wand. It's glowing some soft blue, and he like flicks it and just poof, suddenly he's up in the tree.
Which would have been helpful when he encountered a troll later on.
Right.
But when Willow uses the wand, bad things seem to happen.
Yeah. Oh, and fast forward to when we actually get to Rizel and we see, you know, what she is. That's when he first gets to really start to dabble in his magic, and
he's so confused by her too. He's all like, I'm looking for the sorceress Rizelle?
Oh, I'm sorry, magical talking animal.
I'm sorry, magical talking animal.
I'm looking for someone.
Which is a, it's like an, it's an Australian possum, is what the creature is. And so.
Farmers.
Farming. Like, I am Rizelle.
A farmer.
You must take me. A Laura Dannon. Mm-hmm. The prophecy. It's true.
When she crawls up next to Laura Dannon, like, oh, Laura Dannon. Oh.
I mean, lo and behold, like, obviously Rizelle is very, very important to the story, but good God, she is the most annoying, whiny, and, like, bitchy character that
you can come
across.
Up until she turns into human.
Right, when she finally turns back human. Yeah. But then again, she's been on the island alone for so long, and for however long she's been there by herself.
Finn Rizelle? That's a name I haven't heard in a long time. A long, long time.
Thank you, Obi-Wan. So lo and behold, like, Finn's, like, Rizelle's main goal is to teach Willow the magical words so he can change her back, and then she can wield the magic wand and take down Bav Morda, despite the fact that it's Alora Dannon who's supposed to take her down.
They don't really get into that.
Your eyes can deceive you. Don't trust them.
They don't get into that. But Willow is desperately trying at different intervals to try and change her, and very unsuccessful, and obviously did not pass all of his marks at Hogwarts.
No. But this sort of leads us into what I think starts really getting the tempo of the movie going, which is when they're captured. And we've changed climates. We're in the mountains now.
Oh, yeah. Again, like, very, very different temperaments, or like temperance in the, like, the layout of where everything is in this country, in this land, but somehow they can make it there like that.
What if that's the same mountain?
It's a fast travel point. I swear, that's exactly what it is.
Well, and then another thing you notice in this scene is, and it's a running theme, that everybody calls Willow by the racial slur Peck. Even the brownie at one point
goes, the brownies always call him a stupid peck
like you. It's like, you're smaller than him.
They come up, like, the brownies are like, what, 3 inches tall?
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're not very big. They obviously have this superiority complex, because I think anything, again, if you relate it to anything that's, like, fantasy based, just like Lord of the Rings, like, no one's going to, like, look at a hobbit. No one's going to, you know, really care or think that they're going to do anything.
But if you think about it, every human character that's in the movie, Eric, Mad Mardigan, Sorsha, Bav Morda, has all called him a peck at some point during the movie.
That's true.
Sorsha
even
kicked him
right
in the tavern after calling him a peck.
Intense. Got some racial division here. But do you think George Lucas has dove deeper into the poor racial choices of movies?
Well, once again, there's not even a Lando Calrissian. Oh no, there is. It's one of the guards in the village. Lando Calrissian.
Which one?
Oh, it's he's the same guy that was in Bad Santa. It's the same.
Oh, yeah. It's the now I can't think of his name. He did go. No, he didn't go traveling with them, did he? I can't remember if he did. I can't remember. He's the guy who always plays the elf in Bad Santa. I can't think of his name.
Yeah.
But I'll look it up right now.
But this brings us to one of my favorite scenes, the Dust of Heart. Her Dust of Heartbreak.
Tony Cox.
Where we get Mad Mardigan falling in love with Sorsha.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
No, this scene really separates and makes this, elevates everything, because the acting you have from Mad Mardigan is so passionate, and Sorsha so confused.
That's the first time you see her without, like, her battle gear on, like, her hair's, you know,
fiery red hair,
unkempt, and that's why I kissed that poster for many years. And then was it in her
battle gear, or was it in, like, her just hair down?
I think it was in battle gear.
But, oh, okay,
you know, different idea.
You knew who was under it.
But the chemistry between them is very noticeable.
On point.
Val Kilmer married that actress.
They eventually married, and then they eventually had two divorced.
Wow.
Yeah. It's really funny because there's the moment in the movie where Matt Mardigan, he just says the line like, I hate that woman. And I had to like write in my notes, you marry her.
Spoiler alert.
And then Matt Mardigan finally gets his hands on a sword.
And yes.
You are great.
You are great. And he like takes that moment, twirls the sword a bit, and he slips in the snow. And you're like, oh, okay, it's back to being... You know, you can't be perfect. It's back to being goofy.
Yeah, now we enter the sled scene, such like the Goonies slide scene down to right. The pirate ship.
Yeah,
they ride a shield down the mountain. Which, if you look closely, you can actually see the tracks that the sled is on
mm-hmm.
while going, and obviously like a fake baby, because the baby's not going to survive. You know, that entire sled ride, but like. You see the distance that they're going? Like, they go quite a distance, which is shocking, because when Willow gets down to the very end of the mountain,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, slams into the door of one of the buildings and safely crashes, apparently. Again, Laura Dannon goes through time and time again very, very dangerous situations and comes out unscathed. But you have... Mad Mardigan roll down in typical snowball kind of a comedic fashion.
It always gets a chuckle out of me
right.
when
he,
you
he
see
he fell
that
off the sled and he is
giant
gained,
snow block.
Yeah, snow
for
block
some
surrounding
reason,
him.
And I don't know why this ever happens to me, but like every time I watch that scene, I whisper to myself, as you wish. Just because he's rolling in this, it's great. I don't know. It just
but
happens.
But I mean, like, even despite, like, all the comedy and, like, them making it safe to the village, which, good Lord, like, what is this village doing here? How do they survive in this remote little, like, snowy area?
Sand people.
They walk in numbers.
Mm-hmm. No, but we are meant to think
they
do.
So... Lo and behold, not even
Eric's there.
Not even like an hour. Not even a half hour.
A strange Chewbacca
is okay. there. But like, what, 15 minutes like go by and somehow all the soldiers that were like tracking them down with Sorsha have made it to this village?
Well, they had snow tracks to follow this time. They had a leg
they
up.
They actually had a trail.
They didn't have they to rely upon
no,
the dogs.
Okay. Even a trail to follow. It was down the side of a mountain. Don't you try and justify that. The horses cannot follow that. But for some reason, they show up, and they eventually are able to escape because they take Sorsha captive
mm-hmm.
and ride away, while Eric, a strange Chewbacca.
The baby starts to cry, Finn Rizal had been changed into the crow at this point, and so now she's trying to hide
she's
the
trying
crying
to mimic
she does a good job. I thought, quick thinking. Mm-hmm.
Is that where she says, Willow, you idiot?
Willow. No, that's
no.
a goat.
Oh, that's the goat.
That's the goat.
Willow, you idiot.
Yep. So they make a run for it. It goes down quite well, and they make it to the castle.
Well, Sorsha
there's
escapes
a little bit of the exposition,
because...
and you can see it in her eyes like, you're going to come after me?
Are you going to come after me?
Mad Mod again!
You're going to get on the horse. Come get me. No, we got to go. We're out of here.
Right. It's one of those moments. It's like that moment in, you know, this song or the Sound of Music where it's all like, don't do it. You're not one of them.
Mm-hmm.
Don't blow that whistle. We're going to go.
They're here. They're here. This actually like brings up my.
You can say that again.
You can say that again. My favorite one. So.
Okay.
Roll it.
All right.
Oh, my goodness. That's the most badass thing I've ever heard.
Do you understand the words that are coming out of my mouth?
That's the dumbest thing I've ever heard.
You can say that again.
So, with you can say that again, we always try to look for the best lines in the movie, because that's part of the joy of film, where you can always figure a line that... It's so comedic or it's so heartfelt, and it's one that always reminds you of the movie, obviously, or you remember a specific part. But with the best lines, you always have the worst lines in film. And they often kind of like, you know, hold the test of time probably even more than the best lines.
Very, very often. And this best line for me is when Mad Mardigan... is explaining to her Sorry, she, you know, it went away. And she looks at him.
Goes, it went away? That quickly? You monster.
I dwell in darkness without you, and it went away? It's just that moment of like, wait, wait, wait. You had all this great poetry, and now nothing?
Sort of.
Then what?
Went away.
Went away. I dwell in darkness without you, and it went away.
Typical guy.
The dust of broken hearts.
It rang true. Gosh. Jack, did you have a favorite line?
I always waffle between do you wanna breed? the elegant out of the way peck. But I think for this episode it's going to be Finn Rizzell during the wizard's duel.
Who wrote that line? Like, who?
I hope that was ad-libbed.
I hope that was ad-libbed. There were moments that were ad-libbed in this movie, and I hope that that's one of them as well. That was too.
All right, so your character, you're in a fight right now. What would you do if you were casting a spell? Oh, I would say, nah. Like, mm-hmm. Killing it.
No, I will bust that out in everyday life from time to
You
time.
Ever get into a street fight and you throw that out, you're winning.
Just get into a street fight. Everyday situations. All right, sir, we have a Subway Club on wheat. What kind of sauce do you want? No. Oh God!
So what's your worst line?
Oh no! I mean, the best line. I love the head like village elder. I love his lines where he's all like, "I will consult the bones," and he rolls the bones like the bones tell me nothing. Or the
who was Wildor from Masters of the Universe,
right? And he also had a small cameo in an episode of Golden Girls. He plays Rose's father in a dream sequence.
I'm not shocked that you know that.
I love Golden Girls.
That's okay.
Okay. And I love his little line where he's like, follow the bird. The bird's going back to the village. Ignore the bird.
Follow. That's so good.
It's good comedic timing, but I'm going to have to go with when Willow is trying to transform Rizzell back for the first time. And Mad Morgan's like, what will you look like? And she's like, I'm a young, beautiful woman. And he's like, concentrate, Willow. Concentrate.
Don't you mess this up for me, Willow.
Don't you mess this up.
Hither, green and what are you going to look like if this works?
Don't interrupt.
Sorry.
Hither, green and band, Clyde Lunanocht.
I am a young, beautiful woman.
Concentrate, Willow.
Hither, green and band, Clyde.
Be the sorcerer we all know you can be.
Be the sorcerer you can be.
Come on, buddy.
What about a worst line?
Oh, worst line. I would have to either take it to the very, very beginning. Like, the very beginning when the wife or the mother of the daughter of Laura Dannon says, your reign of terror is at an end. the way she says it and delivers it, I'm like, this is garbage, right? Like, that was almost cringeworthy. I'm like, oh
my God.
This is so bad. Worse than what I think that, like, the confrontation of Brokut and Willow at the very, very beginning. I mean, this is just that line. I'm like, come on. This is why you're instantly going to be cut out of this film. You're done.
Where's the baby? The midwife. Find her, baby soldier. Use the dogs. Bring her back to me alive.
Your reign of terror is at an end. She will come back and she will finish you.
Silence, witch.
My baby will finish you.
Kill her.
Drew, did you,
like a worse line?
We'll come back to you.
Yeah. Jack. I'm trying to like bounce forth between them.
So for me, it's at the head of my favorite scene of the movie. And my favorite scene is when Finn Rizzell gets changed back. And like, I feel that's the most emotionally intense part because she sees her hands and she realizes how long she's been changed.
That's a moment, you know?
And it's very, very evoking, but when he goes to change her back, he suddenly has this wonky, inexplicable preamble to his his gibberish magic, like the spirits of eternity above and below, blah 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 blah, fire begets snow, and it's like, this is not needed. Like, just launch into your gibberish like you did before, and we'll be all right with it.
Elements of eternity, above and below. Balance of essence. Fire begets snow.
It's like, you know, he wanted...
Tuatha.
Yeah, because he suddenly has this, like, new spell memorized that apparently he's been working on the entire time, yet can't memorize the spell to change her back, but he has this new spell memorized to protect him from being turned into a pig.
I think it's more like he's warming up, you know, very, the skeleton ran out of the shower, you know, how now brown cow. Okay, I'm ready to cast a spell. Let's do this. Drew, your worst line.
The worst line, because it's the most like ironic moment, I think, is when when General Kale brings back the baby and says, "We have the child." And she's like, "And Sorsha? Sorsha has betrayed us." And she's like, "Betrayed.
Where's Sorsha?"
"She has turned against us, Your Highness."
"Turned against me?" "Prepare for the ritual!"
I hate this moment because the two, like, wise men who are, you know,
not a woman.
The two wise men who are standing by Bad Mordor are all like giving the eye, like
the Emperor's guards.
Like, they give that look of like, "Bitch, we told you she was gonna betray you."
And they share a little side
and
eye.
And they did. It's like, did she not listen to us? She totally didn't listen to us. We should probably leave.
One slips the other one like a $5 bill. Like, nah, you totally called it, man. You called it.
Yeah, I would say that's probably like one of the worst lines, because it, like, you know, as the audience member, like, what's going on, and it was to the point of like the predictability of the story, where it's you can't even take it seriously, because like she's supposed to be like having this great revelation to herself, like, "My daughter's betrayed me," and it's almost comical with the side eye of the two wise men. You're just like, "Oh, okay, I guess that's kind of funny," but.
They're at the castle.
Tyrus Lee.
Which is nothing.
Where there's supposed to be salvation awaits them.
But nothing's there. People are frozen in, like,
this place is cursed.
This place is cursed.
Yeah. And people are frozen in, like,
trolls.
Rock crystal-esque thing. Which apparently, in a deleted scene from the movie, Sorsha's father is there, and he's trapped in the rock, and he tries to, like, tell her to turn against the mother, and this is when, before the baby is obviously taken and back to Bav Morda, this is why Sorsha, I guess, like, inevitably switches sides.
You mean it wasn't Bad Mardigan's badass battle prowess that brought her along, which is what
launching
happened in the movie.
Launching himself from a catapult. But then again, she does give him that
to
little,
like, the interior,
like,
part of the castle.
Right.
She
gives him that eye of like, "Oh, he fights well. Look at him go. I think I could love this man."
But, like, this whole, like, fight scene is, like, Zorro against, like, the Akalde's, like, troops. They are so dumb in everything. Like, every attempt that they try and get to, or, like, they're all kind of coming one at a two at a time. And he's so prepared.
I love the scene, though, when he goes into the armory and he's like a kid at the candy store. He's like, "I'll take this crossbow. Oh, look at this armor here."
He decks himself out in, like, like the gold armor.
Mm-hmm.
Which... Every time I watch the scene where he's putting the bar against the door, I get anxiety. Because for some reason, I'm like, "Oh, God, they're going to get there. They're going to get there."
The gap is so big in the door, somebody with,
like, someone could stick
a sword through.
Like, credit card it and just lift it up.
Pushed upwards. Right. Like, you don't have to cut down a tree. Just push up.
Right. It's like, what are they doing? They're making a battering ram. Okay, well, that's going to take like at least an hour.
Well, then you get Mad Mardigan's preparing the defenses montage.
Yep. Willow's there.
Roll out the barrels.
Have a barrel of fun. But Mad Mardigan like tells Willow, like, what do I do? And he says, go ready the catapults, because Willow, in all his worldly knowledge, knows how to ready a catapult.
It's simple physics that you send the smallest person
who's also like holding the baby. So not only is he readying a catapult with all of his strength, but also tending to the child.
What if he just like was yelling out the entire, Matt Madigan, I can't reach it. He's like, I don't know. Go do something else, Willow.
You just you see Mad Mardigan, and then you hear like a ka-chunk, and you just see Willow go flying through the air.
Mad Mardigan.
Oh, goodness gracious.
But I mean, okay, so here you eventually find out that, okay, when they said trolls at the beginning of the movie, when I first watched this, I loved the idea of trolls because I was thinking something, you know, big, bulky, you know, like slimy skin, like almost like reptilian type of like looking creature, not this like caveman looking Nickelodeon Land of the Lost reject.
I have a comment for that. So this is a Ron Howard movie, and The only thing that is missing from this Ron Howard movie is the cameo by Clint Howard.
Ah, but Clint Howard is in the film.
They modeled the troll fisses after...
No, they modeled...
Anne Ebersisk.
Yes, okay. So I didn't know about the trolls, but when the dragon, when the two-headed, like, Hydra dragon thing comes, Ebersisk, which actually is a combination of the names of
Siskel and Ebert.
Wow.
It's really funny.
Shots fired.
There's actually commentary and names of different characters and creatures in this movie that reference different film critics. Like, Ron Howard was taking shots, and I found it to be very, very funny.
It was George Lucas, did he just run his finger through the taste it? It's salt. It's salt, George Lucas.
That is salty.
Mm-hmm. But I like how while the dragon is attacking everyone, like, there's still plenty of time and safety for Mad Mardigan and Sorsha to fall in love and have their first kiss.
Right. It's just
a second kiss. I mean, that's what technically their second kiss, though. Yeah.
Yes, that is correct.
Thank you. That's what I thought.
So he's using the wand, and I find it very, very funny that he's trying to not only like save the baby, obviously that's his main goal, but you have Roselle saying like, use the wand, and he tries it on the troll and it just like turns it inside out and kills it, obviously.
80s,
but that's
kids movies.
But that also like starts the transformation of Ebersisk, the big two-headed Hydra dragon thing. So it's like Willow's just like botching spells left and right. Mm-hmm. And this is also the point where he tries to transform Roselle again, transforming her into a goat with the whole line of like, Willow, you idiot. And apparently Roselle gets into the fight, headbutting and knocking some soldiers off of the high walkway, which is funny because if you look closely, you can see the film employee who was in charge of the goat, they're holding the back legs of the goat and like pushing it forward.
The stunt goat?
The stunt goat.
Goat simulator.
That's a real game, isn't it?
It is.
Why is that a game? Who wants to be a goat?
Who doesn't want to be a goat, Drew? That's the question.
Can I be a fainting goat?
I don't know if you can be, like, I don't know.
I want to be a fainting goat.
Maybe that's a mod. That's,
there's too many funny videos.
I don't have any
goats.
Goat preferences.
You don't have any goat preferences? Just not to have, like, the eyeball of Satan on you.
Billy Goat?
Billy Goat.
I'll eat some trash.
Oh, Billy Goat. It's a character from Stardust.
Hmm.
Have you seen Stardust? That's a good movie. That's a good movie. Good book. No gaming. Okay. So they eventually...
At the end of this, Willow...
They take down Ebersisk for some reason. Mad Mardigan, like, stabs it.
The sword through the head.
Did you notice the sword through the head goes through the neck of the creature? Which, one thing, it's at the wrong angle to go through the creature. Two, that sword is not that long.
This is very true.
Like, that's one thing I looked at. I'm like, oh, he stabbed it in the head. It's going to be dead. And then I looked at it and I was thinking, oh, well, that just doesn't look right. It's kind of like the extended leg on the Ready Player One poster when it first came out. Like, that just looks wrong. That's not right.
And then at this scene, the Rebel Alliance, I mean Eric, and his disparate band of
it's
survivors
Wars,
show
people.
Up.
It's Star Wars.
And sort of win the day. Kale gets away with the baby, though.
Yep.
again, babies, high survivability.
High survivability. And traveling, again, either a long distance or it's literally over the hill.
Yeah.
Another save point and a fast travel. So they get there. The ritual is being started. This is, again, where they reconvene with all of their soldiers. They get turned into pigs. They get changed back because Willow has finally transformed Rizel into her human form. And she still thinks that she's this young, beautiful damsel. But she's really this old lady because she apparently can't keep track of time while she was a possum. And they somehow trick everybody. And they go.
I take it back. They should have just cut that whole thing out.
You know what? I almost want to say, you know what? You're right. This is the poorest setup of.
Like, apparently, they let their guard down so much that they didn't notice anybody digging trenches big enough to fit, like, an army in.
Where did drum come from?
Feels like
this is a fairly disparate band of fighters. Like, no. Take only what you can carry.
I brought this drum.
Bring my drum.
Lay down some sick beats, Willow.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Maybe they need like the steady drum to keep soldiers moving, kind of like a Bugle Boys or Little Drummer Boys in the Civil War.
Could be.
So. But even if these people were in these trenches and holes and stuff like that, like very Prince Caspian, underground.
But do they even have the time to dig all of them and not be noticed?
Oh, no, absolutely not. No.
No.
But the fact is that like you have like these horses and stuff laying down, cool.
The horses are playing dead.
And they all get up, they storm the castle, which, I get it. You just had to get them inside.
Have fun
just
storming the castle.
It was a ruse.
Yeah. The shield's still up, you know. But then you get to the lightsaber battle, Obi-Wan and Vader.
Did you guys notice how terrible Eric's sword is?
It's the
full, like, it covers the forearm.
It was like a gauntlet, like, cover attachment. It was almost like a glove of holding.
Yeah, it was the worst thing since Kylo Ren.
Right.
Like, you wouldn't be able to have much, like, wrist
Right, it's
motion.
It's very much like, it's for slashing. It's not for, like, you know, clever blocking, going behind you. It's literally like, I am moving forward type mm-hmm. of, like, armament. But yeah,
it's a very poor choice of all the weapons you can have, and then he dies. He delivers a great line though.
Win this war for me.
That's a powerful little moment.
I like that moment. I like Eric.
Right. Yeah.
But all the while, you have Bav Morda preparing for this ritual with the baby up in like the high tower, and Sorsha comes in with Willow and Rizel, and she's like, "Mother, don't do this."
No. Sorry, daughter. You are dead to me now. Old men, please take care of my warrior daughter.
Can you see them out? Sorry. Visiting hours are over.
My badass trained daughter, like, yeah, you guys can totally take her. You know, that works.
Right. But she force grabs her and, like, throws her towards a wall of spikes, and Rizel stops it.
Mm-hmm.
Because, obviously... Like Bav Morda in her
dress warm.
Your power's a weak old man.
So, like, I mean, it's a clear evident where it's very Lucas, because evil is all in dark colors. You have Rizel in this like white cloth kind of like drapery on herself, mm-hmm. Much like again in like Lord of the Rings. I mean, when Gandalf dies and comes back, he's Gandalf the White.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everything is light and dark. It's very clear cut, like, who are the bad people here?
My name is Shalindria the White, or Finn Rizel the White, and I come to you now.
Finn Rizel the White.
And I come to you now at the turn of the tide.
Right. You didn't take the witch's wand? So, this huge little battle, the greatest thing, as we had said, since Gandalf and Sauron.
Mm-hmm.
Saruman. They basically like force push each other
mm-hmm.
back and forth against the wall, left and right, and
light you on fire.
Yeah, she kind of they use the wands ice. A little bit, or sorry, she uses her wand. Bav Morda just like has like innate magic, like she just force shocks her,
mm-hmm.
and eventually it just comes to Bav Morda like choking her out. just getting her on the ground and choking, you know, the life out of her until she, like, passes out. And then the entire time, coming back to go to the baby and finish the ritual, the baby is gone. In the midst of that fight,
Willow has defeated the bone trash can at this point. The animated bone trash can
that got hit by the wand and apparently animated it. So we have like a little bit of Fantasia action coming to life, and yeah, he knocks it out the window, and apparently that kills it.
Mm-hmm.
And all the while, he takes the baby, tries to run. Door is magically slammed, and she's all like, "Bring that baby here."
And again, why the ritual? Why just, like, yeah, maybe Lord Danon will be reincarnated or she'll come back, but just, like, if you think you're going to lose, like, you can, like, just kill the baby.
Yeah, like, what is the ritual supposed to be doing? It's not exactly explained.
Wasn't it banishing her to
the netherworld?
Yeah, to the netherworld, because that's where her power is going to come from, or, like, her soul will remain there tormented. Does it empower you, Bav Morda?
Doesn't matter, because Willow's going to send her to a place where that shit don't exist.
I'll send her to a place where evil is doesn't exist.
But Bav Morda could have easily Groundhog Day'd this. You know, just find the baby, kill it. You got 9 months to plan. Oh,
right.
Oh, cropped up again. Oh, kill it. We'll just plan better next time.
Right, even if the baby comes back, like if it's a reincarnated baby, like, oh, well, keep coming back. And then, again, as you said, like, towards the end, she's outdone by, like, her own, like, inability to
keep calm. She
gave
herself a fright and then bamboozled herself
knocking
into the
netherworld. Knocking over the potions, which fall on her and spill on her. And then she gets struck by lightning because she's so, like, overcome with rage that Willow has done his disappearing pig trick and made Alora Danon disappear. And... I mean, like, he missed, like, the entire situation, like, it's like a Mr. Magoo. That's how she's defeated.
I would have liked the acorn to have at least frozen the hand.
Right?
And not undo that. That could have been, like, you know.
I mean, at that point, like, if she's, okay, so Willow finally does use that acorn and throws it at Bav Morda, and it starts turning her hand to stone, and you can see almost, like, the fright in her eyes of, like, holy crap, what's happening here? Dude. Just like a zombie, you always double tap. Like, at that point, you should have taken that acorn and thrown another one at her.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if she can overcome one acorn, I doubt she could probably have taken both. But then at that point,
this,
like...
This is getting absurd. Now there are two of them.
Now there are two acorns. But she outdoes the magic of the acorn, and she's like, is that all you got? And he's like, well, crap, yeah.
Disappearing pig trick for the win.
For the win. But, yeah. Like, Bav Morda's gone.
That's it.
And... all is right with the world.
They uploaded the Death Star plans. Yeah. You know, I mean, they're good now.
Madam Morgan's a general, a war hero now.
He's a war hero, obviously marrying Sorsha.
Getting.
And Sorsha is now queen.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're.
Can adopt?
And it's like they're going to take Alora Danon, like, under their wing.
But, like,
adopt her.
Does she matter now?
It's kind of funny the fact that, like, again, this is the baby who's supposed to bring the downfall of Bav Morda, and she did nothing.
She's the MacGuffin of the film. Like, you don't really need to do anything with her, you just need to keep track of her.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. I can get that. And it's Willow leaves and decides to head home. And when he gets home, he's riding his little tiny, like, Shetland pony, perfect for him. And Willow is greeted by everyone. They're like, Willow's back! Willow's here! And then, you know, Migosh waves to him, and he's like, Migosh! Everyone's happy to see him. Even Burglecut is happy to see that he apparently has returned. And there's Kaya. Kaya!
She's so happy to see him.
Off in the distance. I mean, I don't know how long they've been gone. But I don't know. It doesn't seem
a week?
Like, I mean, maybe a week, but I don't know why.
She had to till, like, the soil the whole time.
It feels like it feels like it'd be longer.
They've got a farm pig. She'll be fine.
They have a farming pig. But yeah.
Good
one,
movie.
One last thing. The death of General Kale. Again, the brutality of 1980s children's movie. You know, he stabs them, and then they're fighting, and then he uses Eric's sword, and he's like, pushing it into his gut. And then he steps on General Kale's sword and angles it up and then slides his dying body down on it. Like, that was pretty metal.
Yeah, yes.
Yeah. It was violent. It was violent, and but not too.
Mm-hmm.
Not too much.
Just enough.
But yeah. Willow takes an apple, transforms it into a bird, and everyone's like, oh, he really is a sorcerer now. And of course, it takes a poop on Burgle Cut's face. That's the last bit of laughter that we can get in the movie before there's that, you know, pullback panoramic view of
the nice matte
of
painting.
The village.
Yeah.
Yep. And Willow is a hero. Willow has proven himself to be, you know, it doesn't matter like how big you are, maybe just how big your heart is.
I was waiting for
that's not a good thing though.
That's not, we discussed this medically, that's not good. medically no.
A good movie all around though.
It was a great movie all around. I mean, what would you give the movie out of 5?
I'd give it a 4, 4.5. Like, I, for me personally, I know it's,
for me personally, I would give it a strong 4.5.
It has stood the test of time.
Yeah.
You know, we've all gone back and watched these treasured children movies, and this one does hold up. You know, 30 years later, it's still an enjoyable swashbuckling adventure.
Absolutely.
I'd go a solid 4.
A solid 4. So, I did put it out there for some questions for our lovely listening audience. And the first one is going to come from Chris Osborne, who hosts a Play Comics podcast. And he is asking us if we've ever played the Willow video game. And I can honestly say I have not.
I have not either.
I probably rented it when I was a kid. I think it was a top-down view, but I don't remember any details. I certainly didn't beat it.
Yeah, I can't.
The NES?
It wasn't a side scroller. I think it was a top down, but
I'll be quite honest. Sure. I can't remember the game at all. And I'll definitely have to like go and take a look. I'll take a look at it. For those who are interested in like what the Willow video game is, I'll put a link to a YouTube video if I can find
to
it.
A ROM to emulator.
Oh, maybe there is an emulator, but I'll definitely put a YouTube video for like maybe some gameplay if I can find it in the show notes. One of our next questions comes from my good friend Mark on Facebook. He was asking us that Willow, Gandalf, and Miracle Max, if they were to teach courses at Hogwarts, what would they be?
Ooh.
Well, Willow did teach a course.
Willow is Professor Flitwick. So obviously Willow teaches charms. And I think it also like fits with Willow's magic anyways, because a lot of his magic is
charming.
It doesn't seem dangerous per se.
I would say like transmog, like he's a little bit conjuration.
Don't rest
maybe?
Your laurels on transmogrophy, like, with Evil Sisk.
that was a botched spell.
Wait, what are we saying that Gandalf and?
Oh, Gandalf and is definitely defense against the dark arts.
Okay.
Or headmaster.
Possibly headmaster.
Or Gandalf the Grey is defense against the dark arts. Gandalf the White is the headmaster.
Gandalf the Grey, he's pretty stern with his grading when he tells them they cannot pass.
Did you? Is that a repost? That was really good.
I deserve that golf clap.
Wow.
That's fine. Miracle Max, without a doubt, potions.
Mm-hmm.
It makes more sense for him to be potions. And his wife is constantly going to be yelling at him as he's trying to like teach the classes. Like, all right, now mix it very carefully.
Maya Humperdinck! You stop that.
I think that would be the most entertaining class, and you probably would get to like know Miracle Max a lot more, and he'd teach you a lot of other stuff that he's not gonna, because no one's in that class paying attention. So if you showed any interest, he's like,
the half-blood prince was,
you want to know how to like make some, was it polyjuice or like, you know, he's teaching you stuff, how to like stuff like that, street stuff.
He tries to like tell kids, one kid's saying like, well, how did he get a passing grade? Well, he only mostly passed. It's very different from passing.
And then do the incantation to Blave.
To Blave. It's not Wingardium Leviosa. Wingardium Leviosa. To blade. Okay, well, we got one from, let's see, from the In Another Words podcast. Who would you hire for a Willow sequel? Which supposedly there's talks.
As Willow?
I don't know. It, I think it's kind of left open. Like, if characters were to continue, or possibly even, like, maybe a new bad person, because there's no evil now, but maybe new evil will rise.
I just want Peter Dinklage in it, for starters. Somewhere in there.
Warwick Davis is still alive.
No, I'm not saying Peter Dinklage needs to play Willow. I'm just saying that he needs to be in it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know. Like,
I mean, obviously Warwick Davis is back as Willow.
Kaya is Kaya.
I mean, would it be to the fact that maybe Willow has become the head elder, the head sorcerer of his village?
Could be.
And so he must defend against a new evil?
Yeah, and we'd probably have a grown-up version of Alora Dannon.
Oh.
So you could have...
maybe like Alora Dannon, like...
goes evil?
She finds like old spell books of her her adopted grandmother.
Okay.
What do you mean I was a prophecy?
We would have to recast Mad Mart again.
Yeah.
I don't think Val Kilmer can handle that role anymore.
I don't know if Val Kilmer could do it anymore.
We'll see. If he does any newer films with like Top Gun 2 or anything like that, we can judge him then.
I'd like to see Walter White. Who's the Breaking Bad guy?
Oh,
Bryan Cranston.
As an older, grizzled Mad Mardigan.
I'm in for that.
You know, honestly, he needs something to bounce back from with that horrible Power Rangers, you know, character of Zordon.
Yeah.
I was okay with it.
I didn't. Okay. The movie itself was, it's like they tried to capture the campiness of the TV show Power Rangers, but couldn't quite get it right, yet tried to add this like badass like feature to the movie. They made Rita Repulsa like, I don't know, very sociopathic, kinda creepy, rapey. It was very like unappealing in my eyes.
I'd like to see Bill Hader as a brownie. I think that would
the
be,
brownies you I could get
that would, that would be funny. Would be,
like he would sort of be like this sort of deadpan brownie. Then he would be the straight man. We need a comical.
Would you say Seth Rogen and him? Like,
ooh, I don't know.
No,
McLovin.
No, Seth Rogen.
No, I'm trying to. Who would be a funny?
You know what? We put it to you guys out there. Yeah. Write us and tell us who you think that should play the brownies.
The Kevin Pollak brownie in the new remake.
That'd be a good thing. Yeah, you guys write in. Tell us
who
you
think. Where's the mouse hat?
Who would wear the mouse hat? Who would be a good new cast for a Willow sequel? We would love to hear from you guys. So, let's see. So Two Girls on a Bench podcast were asking, you know, does it still stand up? We talked about that it does still stand up. You know, I think it's great for kids, probably like around the age of like 8 or 10.
After the first half hour, it stands up.
Okay, after the first half hour, it stands up. I think it's age appropriate. I think it's age appropriate even now for like kids today. I think it's good to go.
It took me when I was 5 or 6 to see it.
Yeah, it's pretty tame as far as movies go.
I mean, and so, minus a couple scenes. The last question that we had was Beyond the Box that was asking, Val Kilmer, what happened? And
I don't think anybody knows.
I think that's one of our questions that is definitely going to be answered when we talk about, like, you know, if he's going to do a Top Gun sequel. And currently, like, photos online don't show him
looking...
It looks
like Val Kilmer has not had a good
Yeah, he's
good
not looking the
years.
Best of health, but I don't know. Those could be very, very off.
Last time I saw him was a very swollen villain in MacGruber. That was the last time I had seen him.
Right now he's looking rather
rough.
Yeah. He's looking kinda thin. But yeah. So guys, hey, thanks for joining us. You know, we are the Real Phils Podcast. We come to you every other Wednesday with a brand new movie of a different genre. And this was 1988's Willow.
And thanks for having me on, guys.
With a special guest, Jack.
Jack, we loved having you.
Thanks for
coming.
Loved
having you.
Thank you.
So guys, Be sure to check us out every Wednesday on iTunes and Podbean. Make sure to check us out on Facebook. You just look up The Real Feels Podcast on Twitter at Real Feels Pod. If you care to send us an email, we have realfeelspodcast@gmail.com. And don't forget to subscribe. Give those reviews. Five stars.
Five stars.
Landing gear.
I didn't say landing gear at all during this. I should've.
Did not. We were so entranced with Willow. But, you know, guys, be sure to check us out. Next movie coming up, it's going to be a crime movie.
And an intense.
An intense crime movie. Probably has one of the most violent openings for a crime movie. Probably around there.
Tell me about it.
Tell you about it. You know what? 1990 starts off in a car. People hearing something from the trunk. Oh, it's Goodfellas.
Oh, I hate you guys.
Do you want to be on Goodfellas?
I would love to do Goodfellas.
All right. We'll talk about it.
We'll consider it.
We'll see if Jack takes us to dinner or not. All right. You guys out there in Radio Land, have a good night.
Heck yeah.
And remember, you're the realist.
And the feelist.
Yeah.